Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:53 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time, and today is June 27th. And I truly apologise for the difficulties I had yesterday with recording the audio and the video. I thought I had been able to overcome them, and then I realised when I got emails this morning that my microphone had not been functioning. So that really is entirely my fault, and I've been having grave difficulties with this old computer, so I've ordered a new one, and hopefully it should be here in the next few days, and I get everything up and running on new technology, which should at least help my system to run faster. But enough of that. This has been a very eventful day, particularly in the currency markets, and that's had a knock-on effect for just about everything else, because Mario Draghi came out today with this statement: "The threat of deflation is gone and reflationary forces are at play." So, because the ECB has been flooding the market with liquidity, and I think it probably does behoove us to preface this entire discussion with a look at the ECB's balance sheet, because they were the only central bank that took money out of the system ever that we can see so far with such alacrity, over €1 trillion between 2012 and 2014. But then they had to reverse course, and they doubled the size of their balance sheet since 2014. And that trend has been going up in a very rapid manner. And it was inevitable at some stage that it would begin to lose momentum, that they wouldn't continue to print money with such abandon. And now they're beginning to talk about how they might at least moderate the pace at which they are printing money. And they're even beginning to think about what a tapering might look like. Well, tapering still means printing, but because this is an environment where the market has become progressively more addicted to liquidity on with every successive round of quantitative easing, because and regardless of whether that has been in the U.S. or in the Eurozone or the U.K. or Japan or China, because liquidity is global and mobile. And despite the fact that we have been in an environment where the Federal Reserve has stopped printing and is now talking about reducing the size of its balance sheet, because central banks just about everywhere else have been printing, the combined total assets of those major central banks redenominated into US dollars has continued to trend higher. But it has paused. That if we zoom right in, if we zoom right in and just look at the last few years, and let me just see if I can get that up, then what we should be able to see, and I don't know why that's not working now. Maybe if I look for the monthly chart, we can see that it has stopped at least going up. Now, that's because the Federal Reserve has at least stopped r increasing the size of its balance sheet. But if the ECB stops with the very rapid increase that they have been doing with the size of their monetary base, then that's going to have an impact, because the number one influence of quantitative easing has been asset price inflation. The fact that the ECB are even beginning to talk about it has lit a fire under the euro today, and it is up to almost 113 and a half. This is a clear upper dynamic, and it is breaking up out of this short-term range, and increasing the likelihood that it is going to push up back towards this 115 area, which has represented an area of resistance on every occasion since early 2015. But it does increase the potential that this is a developing base formation, and that is something that is taking a toll too on the Bund market. So if we look at German Bunds, they were in negative territory last year. The yield has subsequently bounced, and it has found support in the region of the trend mean again in here today. So it was up at 12 basis points. But of course, 12 basis points up to 37 basis points is the bones of a 33% move in a day. These are rather silly numbers. What we really have evidence of, though, is that for the first time, really, since 2013, that yields are finding support in the region of the trend mean, and a sustained move below that trend level would be required to question the potential for yields to expand. There are two big components to the way that this monetary largesse has helped to support asset prices. One, of course, is because of the cheapness and the availability of liquidity, which gets put to work. So it travels throughout the world in search of attractive assets and undervalued assets that can be bid up. But of course, then it also ha the relative devaluation of the euro has also been a significant tailwind for Europe's very large export sector. And when we look at, for example, the DAX index, which has been among the greatest beneficiaries from this monetary largesse, it hasn't really gone anywhere for nearly 2 months, but it is pulling back. That was a very small key reversal at the absolute peak on June 20th, but and it has followed through on the downside. But I think you would really have to get your sorry about that. You would have to get your magnifying glass out to really to see that. And the more important point is that when we look at the weekly chart, then we have this overextension relative to the trend mean. This is still a benign environment for European equities, but they are somewhat overextended. And even if we can say that about European equities, then it's an equally valid argument for something like the Nasdaq, which was down 100 points in here today. And this is rather significant because it is more overextended relative to the trend mean. And now we've had that big pullback at the beginning of the month, which was the biggest pullback in a year, and now we're getting increasing evidence of resistance being encountered below that peak. If we were to get additional follow-through tomorrow, then we'd have a lower low. And that would then in further increase the potential that we are back in a mean reversion environment. Something that we have seen, I did commented on it in yesterday's audio, but of course you didn't hear that, so I want to cover it again, is something that we've seen on a number of occasions, is that on down days, it is some of the shares that are most overextended on the upside relative to their trend means. And for example, today you have JD.com, Netflix, Tesla, and Nvidia, and those have been among the leading shares this year in terms of performance. But also, they have got the most or the largest overextensions relative to the trend mean. On days when they come down, we get some of those that have been most overextended on the downside relative to their trend means. And Mattel, for example, has been one of the worst performing shares this year. Tractor Supply Company is also one of the worst performing shares in here this year, and they were among the better performers today. It suggests that there is a certain amount of pairs trading going on, but also that when people are getting out of something that is very, or and I think probably it is a misnomer to call them people, when computer programs are getting out of things that are very overextended on the upside, they look for things that are very overextended on the downside in which to get involved again. Liberty Global, in through its many iterations, is also in that list. Something that is also worth considering is that the VIX index is not the only measure of volatility. Options volatility on the Nasdaq have been actually trending higher for the last few months. There is a clear progression of higher reaction lows there, and this is different than we have seen for really quite a while. It was almost a year ago that was the last time that we saw a progression of higher reaction lows within the Nasdaq's volatility indices, and this is suggesting at least that we can anticipate some additional volatility from the Nasdaq, and not least because it is so overextended relative to the trend mean. The VIX index, meanwhile, has been comparatively quiet. It was in positive territory, and here today was up a full point, but it is coming off of really quite depressed levels. So this is also suggesting that we may be coming towards the end of what has been an incredibly quiet period of time for volatility measures. It is also worth looking at that weekly chart for the VIX index, because we have that very a clear progression of lower rally highs since the middle of 2015, and this has been incredibly inert. That I can't give you the exact figure of how many times the VIX index has traded below 10, but we have now seen more times that it has traded below 10 in the last couple of months than we've seen in its entire history. So this is quite a very different environment, and it's peculiar, and it isn't likely to last beyond the short term. That this just when we have these very peculiar events in markets, that's not a signal that things have really changed, but rather that it is you're getting. I wonder if anybody has the statistics on what kind of standard deviation event that is, that when you get so many periods of time in a very short, or so many occasions within a very short period of time, that the VIX is trading at such very low levels relative to its history. That has got to be a significant standard deviation event, and again, that is not something that is likely to persist. We are also entering the period of time in the year where it is more likely that we're going to have some volatility. That the seasonally most attractive time to be invested in the market is between the end of September and the end of May. And that the most volatile time of the year is between the end of May and the end of September. So we are now in that more volatile period of time. And what it has historically given us in the last few years has been an attractive buying opportunity. So that is something that is really worth keeping in mind, that this is not the time really to be taking big risks, but rather to be looking for better buying opportunities. And that the most likely scenario is that for things that are significantly overextended relative to the trend mean, that we are likely to get some pause and consolidation. And for example, Nvidia, which really took off like a rocket from 100 to 160, does look susceptible to some, at least some consolidation. And that was a very large key reversal that we had at the beginning of this month, and it has so far failed to take out that level. And if we actually go back and look at its history, that previously, when it has had key reversals, they have held up the price for a fairly significant amount of time. And that would, at least, I think that that is probably the best case scenario at this stage. Now, gold prices pulled back really very sharply yesterday by about $20 on very high volume. But there are, I think, two things that are important. One is that it was only $20, so there is demand in the market, but there was not enough demand to push it straight back up again. And considering how weak the dollar was today, and I think it is correct to say that the dollar was weak, because it wasn't just the euro was strong, the renminbi was strong as well, and so was the pound. The pound, or the gold prices, could have been stronger, and they were in fact only up $3. So there is still a degree of indecision in this market. It has held a progression of higher reaction lows so far this year. It is in the region of the trend mean. It is around where, if support is going to be found, well, this is it. But the reality is that in order to confirm that the downward bias since really the beginning of June has broken, then it is going to have to sustain a move above $1,260, and it was not able to do that yet today. And the gold shares have got a very similar pattern to the gold price. So if I think we can anticipate that if gold does in fact get above 1260, then the gold shares will also do well from here. And it is interesting too what's going on in the oil market. Oil prices were a little bit firmer in here today. They are now pressuring this progression of lower rally highs. They were not able to hold the advance, and part of the reason that they didn't hold the entire advance is because of I think this news story that was breaking today, that the shale break-evens on existing wells are, generally speaking, in the $30 area. There are some significantly below that, but that the cost of a new well, and this is not considering the extent to which there has been a large amount of hedging activity going on at the beginning of this year, even new wells in at least four of those locations are in the region of $40. And prices right now are at $46. So that means that it's economic to for new wells to be drilled without hedging in significant portions of the US unconventional oil and gas territories. So that's a headwind. That's a headwind to prices rallying. It is either going to require that demand pick up pretty significantly, or that OPEC decide to cut their supply again. And considering that the first cut to their supply was like herding cats, the reality is that it's going to be difficult to get that done. So, what is the other, of course, potential is that they try to talk the market higher, or that we get some activity in the market to try and pressure some of the shorts. It is do or die now for oil. And if we get some upside follow through tomorrow, well, then that will break the downward bias. But I think that what is important here is that we have not seen clear upper dynamics. We've seen major upper dynamics back in August, back in September, and back in November. And those stood out on the chart. They were very, very clear resumptions of demand dominance, and this just does not qualify. It is nothing similar to what we've seen previously. So that would suggest that more is needed to really confirm that oil is getting or catching a bid down here at these levels. And copper prices were pretty quiet in here today as well, but they have been firming over the last few weeks, and this has been a pretty lengthy period of consolidation following that massive reaction against the prevailing downtrend at the end of last year. So this does continue to look like a demand-dominated environment, and it has found support exactly where it needed to. And many times people refer to copper as Dr. Copper because it is reflective of global economic growth. And the fact that the ECB is even beginning to think about reducing the size of its quantitative easing is supportive of the view that, and like Mario Draghi said, that reflationary forces are at play. So that is generally benign news. So then you have to think about what is the trade-off between liquidity and actually better news. Well, it suggests that we will have mean reversion, but that it's unlikely to represent top formation development, and that we will be set up with a better buying opportunity once this mean reversion has run its course. I think it is perhaps also worth looking at the renminbi, because that was really quite significantly strong in here today. And now we have evidence of the and we can see very clearly on the weekly chart that there was a clear upward bias for the US dollar all the way from the end of 2014. And there is increasing evidence that that is now over, that the Chinese have seen their currency come down about as much as they are comfortable with, and not least because there has been significant pressure on outflows. And one of the easy ways to take some of the pressure out of investors trying to get their money out of the country is to support the currency, and it is looking increasingly likely that that is what they are doing. And that could also be part of the reason why Bitcoin was weaker yesterday. So it did pull back sharply, and it was in negative territory earlier on today, but it has held. The fact that the renminbi is strengthening up, that could represent something of a headwind, which could keep it trading below 3,000 for at least the next few months, and that would at least help to unwind some of its overbought condition. And I think with that, I will leave it for today, and I wish all the best to all of you, and hopefully my technology woes will come to an end pretty soon.